Tokyo Podcast Episode Number 43.
On this show, I talked to Yoshimi Horiuchi-san, whose organization Always Reading Caravan works to increase reading in the rural areas of Thailand. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And on today's show, I'll be talking to Yoshimi Horiuchi-san, who was born in Japan and has been blind since birth. She now lives in northern Thailand and runs an organization called Always Reading Caravan, which provides mobile library services to children in the rural northern parts of Thailand. And the reason why I wanted to have her on the show today was I was basically just curious as to what it's like for a blind person to live and work in Thailand compared to Japan. If you've ever been to Thailand, or specifically Bangkok, you know that walking around that city is extremely difficult, even at the best of times, even for a sighted person. The sidewalks are not flat. You're navigating streetcars and food vendors and motorcycles and dogs and everything else that they can put on the sidewalk. And even as a sighted person, I mean, it's not just a casual stroll down the street. Whereas you compare that here to Japan, first thing I noticed when I came to Japan here was how flat the sidewalks are and how clean and wide and open the sidewalks are. And everywhere they've got the dotted strip so blind people can you know, get around the city. Whereas in Thailand or Bangkok, like, there's none of that. So I can't even imagine what it's like for a blind person to try to get around the city of Bangkok. So I thought I'd ask Yoshimi to come on the show, give us an idea of what it was like growing up in Japan as a blind person and now working in Thailand as a blind person. And also, this is something that might be of interest to anyone who runs a website. I asked Yoshimi to give me an idea of how she surfs the web. If you check out her Facebook page, she is surprisingly active on Facebook and other social media. And I was curious as to how she does it. Now, I know there's screen readers that kind of read the screen and all that kind of stuff, but I really kind of wanted the details of how she uses her phone, how she uses Facebook, and any tips that she might have for webmasters in designing their site to make it easier for people with limited vision. So I'll be talking to her a little bit later on in the show. Before we get to Yoshimi, I just briefly wanted to talk about the London 2012 Olympics, which wrapped up last week. I don't know if everyone else has been watching or not, but I certainly have and enjoyed it immensely. Although I gotta say, I didn't really quite understand the opening and closing ceremonies as much as I thought I would. I guess you gotta be a bit more British to understand it, because there's a lot of it that kind of flew over my head. But I thought that the closing ceremonies were pretty good, but I think there was a lot of inside humor there that the Brits probably appreciated more than everyone else. But Japan did very well in the Olympics. They came away with 38 medals, 7 gold, 14 silver, and 17 bronze. So a fantastic showing for Japanese athletes. And one particular athlete I wanted to mention is Hiroshi Hoketsu. I hope I said that right. Hiroshi Hoketsu-san. And what's interesting about Hiroshi is that he first competed in the 1964 Summer Olympics in show jumping. That's, you know, horse jumping. And which makes him the oldest Japanese athlete to compete in the 2012 Olympic Games at age 70. And he competed in the individual dressage competition and he finished 40th. And individual dressage is an equestrian event where you basically ride a dancing horse. I don't really know what it is, but your horse dances to music and Hiroshi-san sits on top of the horse. But pretty remarkable achievement, Hiroshi-san at age 70. And what's interesting is that he wasn't always an athlete. Like, he didn't have this Olympic career. He competed originally in show jumping. He stopped, became a salaryman for most of his life, and after he retired, then with the encouragement of his wife, decided to get back into Olympic competition. So fantastic job to him and to all the Japanese athletes. Born in Kochi, Japan, and nearly blind since birth, Yoshimi Horiuchi is the founder and director of Always Reading Caravan, which is a non-profit organization that provides mobile library services to children and adults in the rural parts of Thailand. She joins me today to talk about the work that she's doing to bring reading to the country areas of Thailand. Hey Yoshi, welcome to Tokyo Podcast.
Hi Anthony, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Now, since this is an audio show and people can't see you, can you kind of explain to us the unique challenges that you have in life since you were born?
Okay, I was born nearly blind. They found out about it on the second day after my birth. And I used to see a little bit, like light and color perceptions, just a little bit of sight. But I got totally blind when I was like late teen. So I'm totally blind, 100%. Yeah.
When you could you see shapes, or was it just kind of color? Like if you saw a car in front of you, could you tell it was a car, or could you just tell it was something big and red?
Good question. Yeah, I had, unless it's really big, or I think I have really had never had enough sight to see like clear shapes of anything. Okay. So it's blurs of colors. But I could see colors, but not really like shapes and facial impressions. Yeah, like right. facial expressions.
Yeah. How do you look at that though? Do you look at that as kind of a benefit though, that you kind of have an understanding of what color is?
Oh yeah, color perception. Because I used to see it, so I still remember.
Right.
So it helps me when I picture things or when I coordinate, you know, like the various things in the, you know, in my room, in my
right.
closet, wardrobe, whatever. Yeah. So it helps definitely, but yeah, just like probably most of the people, I don't have like any cravings for any sight than what I used to have.
Right.
That means like I used to see little, right? So right. it would be nice to have them back for right. some time. Sorry about the chicken.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But I can't imagine having the full sight.
When we describe like the color red to someone who's never seen red, it's hard for them to understand it. But for you, you kind of have a memory of what it's like. So
yes,
it must be
so. I can understand like red, yellow, white, those basic colors.
Right.
But I have difficulty understanding colors that are more complex, like marine blue, those, you know, like violet. These color names I didn't know when I had sight, when I had, you know, like color conception, perception.
Right, okay.
So if you could like tell me like it's a mixture of green and blue, blah blah blah, then I could kind of imagine and then make it mix up in my brain.
Right.
But I can never be sure that it's really like the color that you are seeing.
Right. And we should just mention for the audience that you are currently coming to us from a very rural part of northern Thailand, the city of Chiang Mai. And that's why you hear the background noise on your end.
Chickens.
The chicken. Very Thai.
Yeah.
You know, actually, I moved apartments once because I had a chicken wake me up every day at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I actually changed apartments because of a chicken.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in Bangkok. In Bangkok, too. Not even in Chiang Mai, but in Bangkok. Damn chickens. Too bad I wasn't deaf.
Oh, yeah, true.
If I was deaf, I would love to live in Bangkok. It'd be the quietest city in the world. Anyway, so, okay, so you were born in Japan, and what took you over to Thailand?
I went to study abroad in the United States for 1 year when I was in high school.
Okay.
Through an exchange student program.
Right.
And I met a Thai girl there, and okay. we became good friends. And there I got interested in Thai language, Thai culture, because in the States it was totally different from Asian culture, right? So individualistic, and there's no titles for elder people than you,
right?
And every like appearance is different, food is different, everything is different. But when I talked with Phi, who was my Thai friend, we had a lot of things in common, so we got like quite close, and that's how I got interested in Thailand. And I started to learn Thai language when I came back to Japan, and I started just like that. And I came to Thailand when I was in a freshman of university, and I've been visiting Thailand like at least once or twice a year ever since, and I'm living here.
And now you're living full-time in Thailand, and you are the director of Always Reading Caravan. What is the goal of, or actually tell us a little bit about Always Reading Caravan and what the goal is.
Okay, Always Reading Caravan is a non-profit organization to promote the joy of reading. It's not just reading, it has to be fun. So our missions are, one is to promote the joy of reading, like how fun it is to read.
Right.
And two is to provide equal reading opportunities for like children and adults from any background, either impoverished, rich, or you know, like disabled or not, Thai or non-Thais, blah blah blah. And three is actually, this is kind of like a hidden agenda. We want to create more, how do you say, we want to destroy the barriers, mental barriers between people from different backgrounds.
Okay, interesting. Yeah,
through our activities, because there are people who live in different societies, like the poor people live here, rich people live here, disabled people stick together, blah blah blah.
Right.
And actually they are not really mixed
right.
together. So I want to create an environment in which everyone is having fun reading, and they don't kind of like, they are not conscious about physical or other, you know, circumstances.
Well, Thailand is a very class-based society, so I can imagine that you would find that separation of people in there, you know, rich people, poor people, disabled people. So your goal is to try to use the fun of reading to bring everybody together. And how do you plan to do that?
Well, it's quite subtle tactics. For example, I would bring books to children with disabilities, because those kids with disabilities are the one who are difficult to, you know, move out of house or, you know, just roam around the village. So I would bring the books to the children, and then at the house of the children we would conduct like small reading activities, like read the books together. And then of course, you know, Thailand, when something interesting happens, children will come and see, right?
Right.
So through those kind of activities, that children will get together at the most vulnerable children's place, and then they would, you know, like start to mingle with the so-called marginalized children without knowing that they are, you know, like they are together with the children with disabilities or
right,
something like that.
Right,
because
right.
we never want to say like we are working with the children with disabilities, we work for children with disabilities, because the moment that you say that you work with the vulnerable children or children with disability, cultural children, then so-called like non or mainstream people would say, oh, these are not for our kids.
Right, okay. So as soon as you use the word disability,
yeah.
it shuts out a whole group of people who think that their children don't need it.
Exactly. So when we go to do activities in a park, for instance, we see quite a few children who appears to have some form of disabilities, like developmental disability, autistic, yeah, and stuff like that. But we never mention, that right. in that group.
Okay. And then the Always Reading Caravan that what do you guys do?
Yeah. What do we do, right?
What, yeah.
Okay.
I know it's a reading program, but how do you facilitate this?
Okay. We have projects in Bangkok and in Chiang Mai province, and also some little bit of it in Chiang Rai. In Bangkok area, we do weekend mobile libraries. So we would go to parks and we would go to villages and to special schools to conduct reading activities. And that's one thing that we want to strengthen in a couple of months to come. And in the north, we do have a e-mobile library. So it's just a small library in a rice barn.
In a rice barn?
Yeah, it's like on a raised floor.
Okay.
Made of wood and a thatched roof.
But when you say e-mobile, some people might think that's electronic, digital.
Yeah, no. Like a regular small right library.
This is an actual real physical library in a yep. rice barn.
Yes.
Okay.
We work together with another organization called Warm Heart Foundation. They work in Prao, Chiang Mai, which is our project site also.
Okay.
So this rice barn library sits in their land property.
Okay. And how do you, Japan is a very reading society. You see people reading on the trains everywhere. What about Thailand?
When you go on BTS or MRT, you may find that Thai people read a lot, but that's only for so-called white-colored people, like white-collar people, or people who are in urban areas.
Right.
Those people who really need to understand the joy of reading, who are like blue-collars or, like working in a field or working in a countryside or factory, very difficult to find avid readers or even just normal readers. They hardly put their hands on books.
Why is that? Is it because books are hard to get? Are they expensive? Are the people not educated? Are they not interested?
Okay. The education is not so much a problem, because the actual literacy is more than 90%. Actually, it's 92.3%,
right,
according to the number I have. But the number doesn't mean anything, because like you said, the books are very highly priced. So the normal, to get a soft covered picture book, you would have to pay around 100 baht, which is like
$3 meals.
Right. Yeah, like 3 meals, 3 lunches
right,
for you.
Right, okay.
Street vendor.
Right.
And for you to get, for example, if you want to buy Da Vinci Code or Harry Potter, which is a translated literature.
Right.
Mostly in hardcover or even softcover, it doesn't cost less than 250. So it's certainly more than 250, sometimes 300, sometimes 400 often.
Right, 300 or 400 baht for, yep, as they say in Thailand, Harry Potter.
Yeah, Harry Potter.
So say 300 baht is about $10, which is about just under 1,000 yen, and about 700. Now, to someone in America or someone in Japan, they may not sound like a lot of money, but when you can buy a bowl of noodles for 30 baht.
Yeah.
To think that this one book costs you the equivalent of 10 meals.
Yeah, you imagine.
It's a lot.
Yeah, for example, for those of you who live in Japan, you could eat 10 ramen noodles
right.
to buy a Harry Potter book.
Right, buy one book.
Yeah.
mind.
Or probably 20 Yoshinoya
udon. Right. So if you think about it, which would you rather do? Buy one book or eat 20 meals? So you can understand why people in northern parts of Thailand, the rural parts of Thailand, have difficulty getting access to books. And I imagine that your project is to provide books like Harry Potter, right? Not just educational books, but...
No, we don't take textbooks.
Oh, you don't take textbooks? Okay.
Nope.
So what you do is you take these books and what, do you have a bus and you travel around to different parts of Thailand?
Yeah, we wish we had a... we are actually working on getting one truck on our own. But
okay.
So far, when we do the mobile library project in the Bangkok area, we rent a van to visit different sites. Or we go on a car of one of the volunteers.
Right, okay. What about in northern Thailand? How do you do it?
Right. So in the northern Thailand, when we do reach out, outreach projects in the different villages, we use the motorcycle.
Ah, okay.
So we go on the motorbike, and then put the books on the basket, and then we hang it on the, you know, like the front part, and we put it in our backpack, and we go around the villages.
Ah, okay. And what's the reaction from the villagers and the people when you show up with the books? Are they interested in reading? Do they want to read?
Actually, when we mention the name book, they are quite they take one step backwards, because the moment that we say the name, the word book, they will say, oh, this is for study. Right. I am not so comfortable with it. I don't know how to read very nicely and stuff like that. And because the word read books in Thailand, in Thai you say anansu, and anansu actually literally mean to study. So you would say anansu for my test tomorrow.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So you know, it's the reading and study is so deeply connected in their mind that it's really difficult for us to approach very directly. But when we bring the books with pictures, we bring magazines with pictures, picture books with colorful illustrations, and, you know, pop-up books with, you know, like moving objects and stuff like that, then their attitude suddenly changed. They would really be, wow, these are really fun. It's not stressful at all.
Wow, interesting. Right. So they've never seen that type of fun book. Most of their books have always been associated with school and studying.
Yeah, can you imagine that we've just visited a school not too far from the town here in Prao, in Chiang Mai. And they had not most of the books that they had was textbooks. And those books for children that we think is, you know, like should be in the library, like science fiction books and, you know, stories, picture books, those were only 70 books for one school with around 200 kids. So, you know, you can, and there are no library with books for children in Prao district.
Are there a lot of public libraries actually in Thailand? I don't even remember seeing that many when I was in Bangkok. Do they have a extensive public library system?
Right, that's a very good point, because that's another reason that we are doing this. Libraries are very scarce in Thailand. For instance, there is one library, district library in this Prao district, but I don't see any picture books there.
Oh,
any.
Okay.
Mostly textbooks, because that operates with non-formal education sector.
Right.
And very, very few entertaining books, and very few up-to-date books. In most of the villages, they don't have any book store or libraries.
Okay, so it's really difficult then for students to get access, even adults, to get access to any type of book.
Yeah, if you want to go and buy your favorite books, you just have to go to the the city of Chiang Mai, which is 100 kilometers away.
So then you guys, where do you get your books from? And if people wanted to donate books, how can they do it?
Okay, we mostly buy books here in Thailand because Thai publishing companies do produce very, very, very quality books. But there are some books that are not so available. For example, the pop-up books or those, you know, like books with special texture, like tactile picture books that you can, you know, you can touch the furry skin of, right, you know, right, deer or whatever. And, you know, books with a sound or big size book or book in with a hardcover, which costs much, much more expensive here in Thailand.
Right.
So we do ask for those special books from abroad, which is mainly Japan right now, but we do accept the book donation from any country, preferably English-speaking country or Japanese-speaking countries, because most of the volunteers are either English-speaking or Japanese-speaking.
And do you, if someone wanted to donate some English books, do you guys translate it into Thai?
Yes. We are very lucky to have very skilled volunteers across the country and even some in Japan and abroad who translate each book from the original language into Thai and then put the sticker on the book to modify it into Thai language.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
And then if people wanted to donate books, how can they do that? Can they do it through your website at alwaysreadingcaravan.org?
Actually, I would recommend you to go to our Facebook page because that's much more updated.
Okay.
Yeah, our website is under construction, so you would not have a full information there. Even if you are not on Facebook, you could see our fan page on Facebook at facebook.com/arcbookworm.
Right. Okay. So if people are listening to this in Bangkok, they can call your organization and maybe either drop off the books or have them picked up. If people are listening to this internationally and they want to donate, they can get your address from your Facebook page.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions that might seem kind of silly to you, and you probably get asked these all the time, but I'm very curious as to how do you browse the web?
Okay, to browse the web, I use my computer mostly, sometimes my iPhone, but my computer is just a normal computer with screen reader software. So what screen reader software does is to read what is on the screen, just like the name says.
Right.
I usually use only keyboard, not mouse at all. I don't have mouse.
And then how do you navigate? You move the arrow keys?
Yes.
To just move your cursor?
I use the arrow keys, of course, and I use the tab keys,
right,
to go through links.
Right.
And I use different navigation keys, which is assigned for the screen reader software users, to go through headings and text boxes, form modes, radio buttons, combo boxes, links, those different features in the website. Headings, yeah.
Now, this is probably another really silly question, but to me that would seem, it takes a long time to read a page, doesn't it? Because mm-hmm. to tab to every element on the page, mm-hmm. doesn't that must take a long time.
Very, very true. So, I personally don't like the page which has so many information in one page, because it's like, okay, we can't scan through so much.
Right.
Especially on the first site that, you know, the first time that we land on that website.
Right.
So first we have to go from top to bottom what the whole website look like. And once you get the glimpse of the entire page, you will have a picture in your mind that, you know, like, oh, so this is the, you know, the outlook of the website. So then we can go to the place that we really want to go.
Right.
So to the heading that the sick, like a heading 2, heading 3.
So those H1, H2, like heading 1, those tags really help you get an idea of the navigation of the website.
Oh, absolutely. It makes a difference, like really big difference. It's like one and like nothing and everything.
Interesting. Okay. So then if you had, say, a suggestion for some web designers, people building their websites, to make it easier for you to view their site, what would you suggest?
I would suggest them to please put headings and, you know, those landmarks for each items, like lists, tables, blah, blah, blah. And also, there is actually a guideline to make a accessible website.
Okay.
And you could look it up on the internet with the word WCAG, WCAG or something.
Yeah, that's the Web Content Accessibility Guideline.
Right, yes. So if you look it up, then you will see a whole bunch of guidelines that you can, you know, you can look up to when you are making a website. So any of you, if you are planning to make a website or blog, please look it up, because when you start something, it's very easy to install something than when you do it after you've done it. Created it.
Yeah. Right. It's easier to do it in the beginning than change it later.
Exactly.
Right. And then for people with images in their website, for you to put a little descriptive caption on that image, is it helpful?
Oh, absolutely. It makes a difference between just a whole bunch of nonsense, like meaningless numbers and a colorful picture. Because if you don't put the caption, it just shows us graphic 1, 2, 3. Or it can be something like p12345670.jpg.
Right.
Which doesn't mean anything.
So that's the actual file name coming maybe directly off someone's camera or something. But if they don't put what we call the alt tag, if they don't fill that in to you, it doesn't mean anything. It's just the name of the picture of the file.
Yes.
But if we put in there like juicy hamburger at, you know, McDonald's or something, then you kind of get an idea in your head of what you can kind of match that picture with what you're reading, right?
Yes, exactly. So you can imagine, we can imagine, and then we can make comments about it, you know?
Right, right.
So it goes not only for the website, but also for the Facebook when you're uploading that nice looking food or beautiful scenery in this and this exotic areas. Please put the caption for screen reader users. You know,
wow, that's very interesting. Okay. Wow, that's fascinating. Has the iPhone helped you in communicating with other people?
Oh, yes, of course. Because what's so great about iPhone is that everything is installed from the beginning.
Right.
So, for example, other mobile phones such as Nokia and Samsung, they do have screen reader software, but we have to purchase or we have to download from somewhere and install it onto the machine, and it suddenly takes. So it doesn't mean that when you buy the phone when you buy from the store, you can't use it from that day.
Right.
You have to wait for a while
which
download
sucks.
It.
For anybody, when you buy any new gadget, who wants to wait, right?
Exactly. But the iPhone, it's already installed. Any of you who have the iPhone app, at hand, please go to Setting and General, and then you go to the Accessibility, and there you see a voiceover. When you on that voiceover, you will start to hear your iPhone speaking to you.
Right, right. And also, too, I know from a friend of mine who has RP, she has the ability to increase the size of the text on her iPhone.
Yes.
So she has limited vision, but when she triple taps the screen, it makes the text much larger and easier for her to read.
Exactly. And you can even make the make it like go between black on white.
Right.
It's black on white to white on black.
Right.
Because many of the people with low vision or partially sighted people prefer to read white letters on black background.
Okay, it's easier for them to see that contrast.
Yes, exactly. So that's also available on iPhone.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, so we are very happy with the
iPhone. You know, I've lived in Bangkok for many years, and I found that even as a sighted person, it was extremely difficult to walk around the city. The sidewalks are not flat. There's food carts everywhere, dogs, motorcycles, sometimes all at the same time on the same sidewalk. And then I came to Tokyo, and I was surprised to see how open and flat everything is. For you, which city is easier for you to get around?
Actually, I think okay, in terms of sidewalk, of course, Tokyo is much better. It's flat, it doesn't have holes and pits in it, it doesn't have food stalls on it, and doesn't
and
have
stray dogs
and, right. that might bite me anytime, you know, scared of the white cane or something
right.
like that. But I really don't have any problem walking around in Bangkok, especially, you know, when in the, you know, really big, like, city area.
Right.
Because there are so many transportation choices available, like bus, MRT, BTS, motorbike, taxi, tuk-tuk, meter taxi, what else? Like this little car, Songtel.
Right.
Yeah, everything are available for all of us. And because we don't drive, we really appreciate the place where public transportations are abundant. And
that's interesting, because I think most Japanese people who've never left Tokyo would kind of think that the public transportation system in Tokyo is really good, and which it is. However, compared to Bangkok, you do a lot more walking here in Tokyo.
Yeah.
A lot more, you know,
because
I have spent time walking in train stations here, whereas in Bangkok, I would have taken a motorcycle taxi to go the same distance, you know?
Yeah, 15 minutes from one station to another.
Right. Yeah. I would never walk 15 minutes in Bangkok.
Nobody does.
Nobody does. So you're right. I guess if you had to walk, Tokyo is probably an easier city to walk around. But to actually get around the city, Bangkok has more options, shall we say.
Yeah, and it's awfully cheaper.
Right.
Like to
get
on a taxi, you have to pay only, like, the first meter is 35 baht.
Right.
Like 100 yen.
100
whereas
yen.
In Tokyo, it's like 710, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Do you find that the people in Bangkok are helpful for you when getting, say, on and off a train or riding the BTS, the train line, compared to people in Japan?
Okay, in BTS, they have a very strict rule that people with disabilities are not allowed to get on a train without a company. So what they do is they provide security guard service. The moment that we approach the ticket gate,
right?
The security guard will run to us and, you know, take us, you know, take our, you know, like smart card or something like that, and then escort us up to the platform, and then at the direction, the other side of the station,
right?
They will be waiting for us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so during the train, to get on the train, even if we are not familiar with the station, as long as we reach the station, it's so easy. It's very safe and easy. Also for the MRT and also Airport Link, which is a new railway.
Right, right.
And also people are very genuinely helpful and kind and very approachable. I mean, when I really don't have a sense of direction, which is nothing to do with the blindness. So I really often get lost when I'm walking around the city. And people will, 90% of the time, without me asking, people will come to me and ask, where would you like to go? And I have to say, I want to go to here. And then most of the people would either guide me to a nearby place or, you know, like give me a very nice direction.
Right. You find that's not the same in Japan?
I would say that blind people in Japan are much more independent because of the, you know, like accessibility and stuff like that, and also maybe mindset also. And so people are more like, maybe she knows the way, you know, unless we stop and look around and like think and right. then like, you know, like really make a gesture that we are totally lost.
Right.
If they won't approach us, they will just leave us. But actually it's very nice for me and most of my friends that I know. We feel that it's much nicer if we have a sighted person walking with us, because when we are using the white cane, we are constantly on alert that something might be in front of us, especially on the platforms where, you know, right next to us is like 1 meter, 2 meters, you know, like downfall.
Right.
So I always appreciate people coming to ask, would you like to go with us? Where would you like to go? Shall I go with you? Blah, blah, blah. Something like that. Really appreciate it.
And you know, I have a good friend of mine in Bangkok. Her name is Fluke. Nickname is Flukester. she has retinitis pigmentosa, also called RP. And she taught me actually how to guide her around the city. Because she said that many times sighted people will ask you, then they'll grab your arm and drag you along. Where she said it's better if you offer someone your arm and then walk with them and point out things on the ground that they should be aware of, such as a step, a ramp, something like that. A dog in Bangkok. It'll be a dog, you know. A food cart.
Or chicken, or something like that.
In Tokyo, you don't have to worry about that as much, but maybe drunken Sally man or something. But
yeah.
In Bangkok, and you know, you're right, is when I'm walking with Fluke, the thing too is also is I have to be aware of what's on the ground, but also what's above, like, her head level. You know, because I can't be focusing on the ground and she walks into like a overhang or something, you know, bangs her head. So you're right. I did find it, I had to pay a lot more attention when I was walking with her to everything that I saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
true.
Yeah, it was a lot more work for me.
True. Because you are watching for two people, literally, you know,
right.
Literally you are watching for two people instead of one.
Right.
So, yeah, but never mind, yeah, like blind people are so used to, you know, bumping into things, and you don't have to feel guilty for, you know, like, you know, one time you let Fluke bang her head against, you know, like signboard. I'm sure that she doesn't mind that much, because we would bang against something anyway when we are walking alone.
Yeah, I don't know. Flukester would probably whack me with her cane if I did that. why do you think the differences between Thai people and Japanese people that make Thai people so much more outgoing to try to help?
I would think that in Japanese culture, we have, for example, when we get on a train, let's say that we are like, I get on a train at around 9 o'clock at night, 9 p.m., so the seat is quite empty because the rush hour is over.
Right.
So I'm sure that there are seats available. And I really want to sit because my hometown is like, my home is like 30 minutes away from here.
Right.
But I can't find a seat because the only way I can find a seat is that I touch around and see if these seats are available, which I will never do. What would be very nice is that for people to come and just say, there are seats available, and then just lead us to that, lead me to that seat.
But right.
when Japanese people sees us, they will just think, oh, I want to help. Maybe she's standing there. I want to help her. Maybe she needs a seat. But maybe she doesn't want to sit. She wants to stand for exercise. Or maybe she prefers to stand near the doorway so that she can get out easily. You know, like they assume so many things. And because of these assumptions, they don't approach people with disabilities very easily like people in Thailand do.
Why do you think Thais are so easy and open about approaching others?
Oh, they don't feel humble to do things for others. Because you see, like, doing good things for other people are always good.
Right.
And that's a virtue that Thai people are taught in school from kindergarten up to you know, like high school or university
right.
level. And to offer seats to people, like pregnant people or, you know, people with disabilities, elderly people, it's regarded as just pure virtue. And while in Japan, it's sometimes awkward.
I think also in Thailand is, I think Thais have a larger sense of family than they do here in Japan. You know, even in the Thai language, right? They have words like pi and nong for, you know, sister, and they will refer to other people using words like sister, brother, uncle. And so they have kind of a larger sense of family there. And I think that's what kind of makes them more willing to help others.
Right.
Whereas here in Japan, I think it's people are a little bit more independent, you know, a little bit more hesitant to approach a stranger.
Yeah, especially in the big cities.
Right. And especially think I too, a stranger with a disability, so that the Japanese person may feel that they don't know what the proper etiquette is, what the proper protocol, how to approach that person.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Because in Japan, you know, there's so much etiquette and protocol on how to address and talk to other Japanese.
Right.
That unless they've dealt with another blind person before, they don't know what the procedure is. Taejun, right?
Yeah.
Procedure.
Yeah, taejun, yeah.
Yeah. So they don't know the taejun or how to do that. And so their natural instinct is just not to do anything.
Yeah, they are so scared that they will do wrong.
Right.
You know, we'll just start shouting, what are you doing?
Whereas in Thailand, if they do something wrong, their attitude is, I might be lying.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like Thai people do so many wrong things to blind people, but we appreciate it. For example, like people who are working on a construction, they will grab our cane and pull it, just like, you know, you are walking a dog.
Right, right.
Or they will push us around from the backside.
Right.
Or just like you said, they will take our hand and try to lead us.
Right.
You know, like, it's so many things, but still, doing something is much better than nothing. Please, please, this one is really something that I want to deliver. I mean, say to everyone who are watching this.
So if people see a blind person on the train, or you see a blind person who you think may need some assistance,
which is 90%.
Which is 90% of the time, it's better to go up to them and offer that assistance than not to offer it.
Yeah. Please don't, taken aback. Or
yeah.
Like, don't feel...
upset?
Yeah, don't feel... please don't feel upset when... the person says no thank you, because like everyone has preference. Sometimes they feel like standing, sometimes they prefer to walk alone.
Right.
It doesn't mean that majority of us are feeling like this, but so there are so little of people with disabilities or so little people with visual impairment are out there. If you run into one person and if you get refused, people tend to get, oh, maybe that's majority people.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So
which
please,
is not. Yeah. Everyone's different. Disability,
yes.
No disability. Everyone's different. So
yeah.
Better to err on the side of, you know, helpfulness and offer some assistance.
Absolutely.
Well, that's great, Yoshi. I'm really fascinated with your story and what you guys are doing in Thailand. honestly, what first caught my eye was you know, just how in the world do you get around the city of Bangkok?
I can imagine, yeah.
Because as a sighted person alone, how do you get around the Thai people who walk so damn slow? Do you poke them with your cane? Say hayaku.
Actually, Thai people are getting faster.
Are they really?
Yeah, especially on our BTS. When I came here, say 7-8 years ago, when there was no MRT.
Right.
I haven't seen any person running.
Right.
You know, to catch up with bus.
I've never seen a Thai person run to catch a train or bus in my life.
But now, people are running.
Really?
People run to catch the bus, catch the train. You will try, you know, like squeeze yourself into the train.
Right.
Yeah, it's just like Tokyo.
Well, the thing in Thailand too, though, is they do have to run because the next train may be like 15 minutes, you know, whereas here in Tokyo, it's 3 minutes, you know. So in Thailand, you actually do want to run, but I've never actually seen anybody run, you know.
Yeah, maybe you come to Thailand again and you will see different.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But if people want to find out more about your Always Reading Caravan organization and perhaps donate, you're always looking for books, you're looking for translators, they can visit your Facebook page at facebook.com/ARCbookworm. Mm-hmm. And I'll post a link to that from my website at Tokyo Podcast as well. Thanks, Yoshi. Thanks for coming on the show. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anthony. I really enjoyed it too.
ขอบคุณมากครับ
ขอบคุณค่ะ ありがとうございました
Thanks again to Yoshi for coming on the show and giving us a fascinating look into her life and her work in Thailand. If you are interested in finding out more about her organization, Always Reading Caravan, check out their Facebook page at facebook.com/ARCbookworm, and I will post a link to that from my website at tokyopodcast.com. For all of you listening in Tokyo, if you see a blind person on the train, don't be shy. Walk up to them and ask them if they would like to have a seat. I'm sure they'll be more than grateful for that. And if you have an iPhone and you want to feel totally useless, go to the General Settings page, what do you call that, app, and click on Accessibility and turn on VoiceOver. Okay, where is that? It's under Settings, General, Accessibility. Turn on VoiceOver and close your eyes and try to use your phone with your eyes closed. Because it's really interesting, because everything you touch, the phone does speak to you. But I tried it and it's really hard. I can't believe how well she can use it and other blind people can use it. And Yoshi was telling me offline that these smartphones like iPhone have just opened up a huge world of communication for blind people and I suppose deaf people as well with text messaging. That before it, her options were a little bit limited, but now with the web and with these smartphones, she can communicate a lot easier with other people. So all of you webmasters, remember your H1, H2, H3 tags, remember your alt tags, fill in the descriptions to make it easier for everybody to come check out your website. I know I'm going to go check mine out right now and make sure all my alt tags are filled in. But that's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Anthony Joe, and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.